This being our last class of this year, perhaps it's a symbol of the dying of the old man and the birth of the new. We have a very interesting statement by Joel in the chapter, Beyond the Pairs of Opposites. And this is it. If, by some accidental chance, you are and always have been good, forget it as fast as you can, because it may keep you out of the kingdom of heaven. And he means it. Now, you know, at one time, this would have been a very serious thing to us. We might even have thought, surely he's joking. It would never have occurred to us that this is the truth. And perhaps you can, in some way, measure your own progress by whether or not you know it's the truth and why it is the truth. Now, we brought that up at this moment in the class because there's a possibility that some of us are not convinced that this is the truth. And I believe that by the termination of today's class, you might agree with Joel if you haven't already. And if you do agree later, but do not now, that will be a measure of spiritual progress. It will enable you to see that one who can believe that goodness is essential to entering heaven and learn within a 2-hour period that goodness or badness does not determine whether we enter heaven, that one has made a gigantic stride. And therefore, that same individual can believe that if I could make just as much a gigantic stride in other levels, things that to me would seem impossible at this moment can very possibly, at another moment, seem very probable, near, within the range of understanding. This is all a preface to putting off the old man. Now, you know that most religions in the world are teaching people how to be good. It is practically the basis of their teaching. It does not attempt to go beyond that. If we can make good human beings out of our congregation, that is all the church endeavors to do. And then, of course, when you die, you have an opportunity to be judged on your goodness or your badness, with a proper disposition of you to the proper place, according to religion. But if we put off the old man now, if we eliminate the illusion of bad as well as the illusion of good, and wear the spiritual garment, we find we have nothing to compare spirit to. It is not good because there's nothing bad. It cannot be better than something else because there is nothing else. And once we have seen that neither goodness or badness leads us to the realization of identity in spirit, then we see what Joel meant there. Now, we remember that it was on the Sabbath that the Master revealed the paralytic was no longer paralyzed. We want to look at another healing on the Sabbath, the healing of the withered arm. And even though this is not in John, but in Matthew, it has a relationship to putting off the old man. You'll find it in the 12th chapter of Matthew, about verse 10. Behold, there was a man which had his hand withered. They asked him, saying, Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? That they might accuse him. And he said unto them, What man shall there be among you who shall have one sheep? And if it fall into a pit on the Sabbath day, will he not lay hold of it and lift it out? And how much then is a man better than a sheep? Wherefore it is lawful to do well on the Sabbath days. Then saith he to the man, Stretch forth thine hand. And he stretched it forth, and it was restored whole, like unto the other. That's the whole summary of the healing of the withered hand. On the Sabbath day, you will notice that John did not take this and bring it into his gospel. But pointedly, he gave us the healing of a complete body, not of a hand, but of a complete body, a paralytic. And if you go back further, he gave us the healing of one who was dying. And the Master said, Thy son liveth. And so we have first a complete life, which was called at the brink of death, shown not to be dying, then a complete body held in the prison of paralysis, shown not to be paralyzed. And now in Matthew, on the same Sabbath, a withered arm. And you find right after this in Matthew, the healing of a blind and dumb man. The healing is quite simple, in fact. Then was brought unto him one possessed with a devil, blind and dumb, and he healed him, insomuch that the blind and dumb both spake and saw. The hand, the eye, the ear. John didn't want us to be satisfied with the hand, the eye, and the ear. He wanted us to see the whole body healed. He wanted us to see the entire life recognized as divine. Now then, let's look at the withered arm, the hand, the eye, the ear. They represent our senses. The hand you touch with, the eye you allegedly see with, and the ear you allegedly hear with. Now we'll ask ourselves, this man with a withered hand also had a good hand. Had not the withered hand been good once? Could a good hand be divine if it becomes withered? Nothing is said here that the man had done some terrible things. There's not the slightest indication that he's been a criminal or a thief or a murderer or in any way has sinned, as humans say it. He simply had a withered hand. Now that withered hand was not created by God. But the hand that was good became withered. Could a hand that was good be created by God if it has the capacity to become withered? And so as we look beneath the surface of the healing, we find a statement being made to us. Neither the withered hand is divine creation, nor the good hand. That which is divine cannot wither. Ah, but then look at the good eye and the bad eye. Look at the man who is not blind and the man who is blind. Some people are blind in one eye. Now, if you have an eye that can see and it turns blind, is that not the same indication? God did not make a blind eye. And what about a good eye that turns blind? Could God have made that? And therefore, neither the good eye nor the bad eye, neither the good eye that became bad, or the blind eye, or any eye, for in every eye is the potential of blindness. And therefore, God did not make the eye. And the ear that can hear and then cannot hear, could God have made an ear that would deteriorate? Could God have made deterioration or deformity? And so finally we see the Master is revealing not that he is going to heal a withered hand or a blind eye or a deaf ear, but he is going to reveal that these are not the divine creation. He is going to remove from us the belief that these senses, this hand which touches, is real to begin with. That the eye which sees is real to begin with, or the ear that hears is real to begin with. And when you have reached the conclusion that it cannot be real, then you must go further and see that that which is not a divine creation, which can wither or become blind or deaf, cannot perceive reality. The hand, which is the sense of touch, the eye, the sense of vision, the ear, the sense of hearing, these are what we call our senses, but they are not divinely created. And then John, wanting to go a step further, took all three of these in Matthew and showed us a paralytic in which the entire body is revealed. Could that which is of God be paralyzed? Did God create paralysis? But if a body is good 1 minute and then paralyzed the next, could it be created by God? We come to the conclusion, no, it could not be created by God. And so the Master is understood by John to be revealing that God did not create the physical form or the physical senses. And every healing now is a revelation that where the physical senses, which God did not create, identify a defect, a deformity, or an imperfection, it is the physical senses that lie. It is the eye that tells you a person is paralyzed. It is the eye that tells you an arm is withered. And the eye is not God's creation. It has no sight of its own. The eye is revealed as that which we call sight, but it is the illusion of sight. No human eye can see reality. The eye sees its illusion of reality. No human hand can touch reality. The human hand touches its illusion of reality. The five senses are totally incapable of cognizing reality. We have the illusion of sight, the illusion of hearing, the illusion of touch, the illusion of five senses. The illusion of a material body. The illusion of a lifespan, the illusion of a mortal life that dies. At the end of this year, we're putting off that which is not, in order that what is may be comprehended and lived in. You might call this learning to live outside the body image. Everyone who is healed in the Bible is living within a body image. The paralytic is living within the image of paralysis because he was living within the image of form. The withered hand stretches forth, and what is revealed? There is not a moment's delay when the the master says, stretch forth thine arm, he doesn't say tomorrow this will be better. He's revealing that now, invisibly present, is the perfect form, the perfect self. The divine being is present where the deformity appears to the human senses. Now, stretch forth thine arm. Now, open thine eyes. Now, open thine ears. Why? Is he going to heal a bad eye and make it able to see? Is he going to heal a bad arm and make it able to stretch forth? He is not. He is revealing that where the material concept appears to be, only the perfect spirit is. And after we get over the idea that deformity is possible in God, that blindness or deafness are possible in God, we then have to go to the other side of the coin to see that the good body, the eyes that see and the ears that hear, are just as impossible. They are the good images, and the deformed ones are the bad images. All that Spirit reveals is that when you're in the presence of Christ, the bad image changes to a good image. It's only in the prolonged living in the Christ that the good image changes to a divine image. Now we are to learn how to live not in the belief of physical form, but in the correct nomenclature for what we have called a physical form. The physical form has been misnamed. It is really part of a great cosmic blackout. It is a mental image which we have called my physical form. It is subject to chance. It is subject to all of the laws of karma. It is subject to every degree of good and bad in the world. Stepping out of this physical image, knowing this that I see as my body image, is not where I live. It is not only possible, but it is the way of the spiritual path. That is the putting off of the old man. Now that's going to be a very difficult assignment for us to carry out in this year of 1972. But it is going to be the way in which we travel. In preparation for it, if you can for the moment, see that the physical form, which can wither, which can die, which can be blind, which can be deaf, which can seem to be losing life, which can be paralyzed, which can suffer all of the iniquities, all of the disasters, all of the problems of this world, this is not the divine creation. It is the mental universe made visible as my so-called form. But there is another universe present, and as Christ stands in the midst of the throng, that universe is brought forth, manifest, as the harmony that is ever present. That is the universe of the soul, present where the mental universe seems to be, is the one and only universe of the soul. And so the withered arm healing and all healings in the Bible are the revelation that where the mental universe, which we call material form, seems to be, there is a real universe, a soul universe, made of spiritual form, without opposites, without being good one day and bad the next, healthy one day and sick the next, seeing one day and blind the next, straight one day and withered the next. These opposites are the universe of the mind. But right where they seem to be, I am. Right where the mind sees its dual concept, which is its own recreated world, the universe of the soul, ever perfect in the divine image and likeness of the Father, stands waiting to be lived in by those who will step out of the body image and know that this is not my habitation. This is the momentary level of my consciousness appearing visibly. It is an image projected by my consciousness. And as I dwell in consciousness and am united with Source, the mind which separates me from my soul, from my soul universe, from my reality, that mind loses its power. The images created by that mind lose their power. And I am once more united with the soul universe, which then manifests me as its own perfect creation, without opposites, without changing health, without changing lifespans, without changing degrees of supply, degrees of happiness, degrees of protection. Always then in the now universe of the soul instead of the time universe of the mind. The Master is revealing perfection now is. Every disease is in the time universe. Every limitation is in the time universe. Everything that is imperfect is in time. Everything that is perfect is now. Your soul lives now. Your mind lives in time. Your soul can now manifest hidden manna, which is the spirit substance of life itself. And as you are able to step out of the image of body and not live in it, but consciously know that I do not inhabit the changing, transient, decaying, limited time span mental image called body. That is an image. A very convenient image, which tells me all I have to know about the level of my invisible consciousness. And right where it appears to be, there is a perfect divine eye. Now, to live in this divine eye consciously and not in the image is not something you can find in a book. There's no place you can even read about it. It's something you learn to do by yourself. This is where you begin to walk in the invisible in a different way than you have walked in the visible. For example, everything that exists in your world around you is there only in relationship to that body image that you thought you inhabit. Now, when you realize you're not there in that image alone, then you learn that this image, which has been you up to now, which has been the source of your motivation, your needs, your relationships, this ceases to be the way you live. But rather you let this so-called image be moved by another level. You become the ice cube. Now, if I'm not in this image, there's no point in prolonging the activity of the image the way I have been doing it. But rather, I must let the Spirit do the work. The image must step aside and be acted upon. It cannot act of itself. And so I can have no human motivation. I can have no human needs. What are the needs that I have as a human? They're only perpetuated by the belief that this image is myself. Without human motivation, without human needs, without human relationships, you then are able to rest in the Christ of self, to relax, to trust Christ, to move itself, and let the image be an outer reflection of the inner activity of the Christ. The ice cube becomes the physical form. It will seem that Spirit is moving that form, but it goes deeper than that. Spirit can never move matter. Spirit did not heal a withered arm. It did not heal a blind eye or a paralyzed body. Spirit revealed that only Spirit was there. Spirit will not move your physical image. Spirit will move itself, and it will appear as if Spirit is moving your physical image. Until you will learn that only Spirit is where your physical image seems to be. I and the Father are one Spirit. The resting in Christ of your own being comes with the inner understanding that this image is not myself. It has no capacity. The hand that was withered did not wither itself. It couldn't decide to be withered or not to be withered. What made it withered? The mind that created it. The mind that created that hand simply passed on its concept, and it appeared as withering. It wasn't even voluntary. The withered arm was nothing but the mind concept made visible. Divine mind doesn't make that hand withered. Divine mind cannot make an imperfection appear in a body, in an image. Divine mind can only reveal a divine image. You put yourself in the hands of the Father, knowing I am the Son. Wherever the Father is, I am. Wherever the Father goes, I go. Whatever the Father does, I do. The Son trusts the Father. The Father is the source, the parent of all. The Son is the expression of that source, individualized. As you dwell with this a while, not in a body image, consciously, you begin to feel different about other people. There's not a hard and fast solid substance in front of you. You begin to feel different about other things. Somehow, a quality in you does not establish hard and fast forms. The forms outside of you begin to know, to be known as images, just as your outer form is to you. You begin to move through images as an image, but behind it all is your living consciousness of Christ, of life, not embodied in matter. You never fall into the trap of being embodied in matter. Things become more fluid, less confining, less limited, and you begin to feel grace is definitely establishing its presence in your non-imaged self. Grace can never enter an image. It must first enter consciousness, and your consciousness opens this way to the invisible grace. And then you see the outer image reflects the new expansion of consciousness which has received grace. Always it is consciousness unfolding, and it is either going to be mortal world consciousness unfolding in dualities, in opposites, or you're opening to divine consciousness, which unfolds without opposites, which unfolds only in divine qualities. Then you find supply doesn't dwindle, go up and down. Health doesn't go up and down. Relationships do not go up and down. Everything is maintained on the divine level within, and therefore manifests the perfection of divinity in the without. Now practice this for a moment and see what I mean. As you lose body identity, and I accept that the image is only an image of your consciousness, and you drop the belief that you are living in that image, you are losing the capacity for that image to become incapacitated. That image in which you're not living can never be withered or blind or deaf. It can only be withered, blind, and deaf when somebody thinks they're living in it, because then it can be acted upon by the world. Now stand outside of it as living spirit, without a specific place, without a specific form, as a state of awareness, with no place to put your head. And then see if you can accept other people as being in bodies when you're in that state. It would be ridiculous. You begin to see the impossibility of people being in bodies. You've been looking at their images. You've been living in their mental world and your mental world. But you will soon find that you're in a soul universe, and not in an image, and then you will be fed by the soul. Instead of living on the bread of the mind, of the senses, you'll be fed by the soul. You'll find why grace hasn't entered your experience as a permanent dispensation. The mind had separated you from the soul by making you believe you are in the image, when you have forsaken the false image, when you have come out of the belief of being a physical image and are resting in a state of awareness, the soul begins to light up within. The inner illumination begins to reveal to you hidden areas of cognition. Omniscience, which is only a word until it becomes, through the soul, a living experience, reveals to you possibilities that are unlimited. The omniscient mind is never blind, never deaf, never lacking, never limited. And in your soul awareness, this omniscient mind is yours. contains within itself the perfect divine image, which is translated through soul into the perfect divine consciousness. You are one with the infinite. You are above the pairs of opposites. You are the child of God, which the human image never was. You are not cut off. You are not in a sense of separation. You are in the infinite rhythm of the Father. The old man is just a memory of yesterday. There is spiritual being living in spirit outside of material form, unconfined, unlimited by a human mind to the dualities of the mental universe. In your spirit, you are free. Now we are to translate this into daily activity so that hard and fast physical objects are seen to be images in the mind. We are to remove power from matter. The only power in matter is what you have given it by accepting it as a reality. The reason the master did not heal the withered arm is because God hadn't created one. What God hadn't created could not be real. You never give a treatment to unreality. This becomes a very illuminating fact because it shows us that even though you think at some time or another you have been healed of something, you are wrong. You have never been healed at all. But rather, reality has been revealed to you. You have been in a soul experience which has been interpreted through mind as a healing. You have been uplifted to the level of soul, seeing reality in the soul universe, and this will manifest in the image world as what we call healing. You may continue to call it a healing if you wish, but you must come above that someday, because the moment you have a healing, you have something which was imperfect and had to be healed, and that is untrue. There is no imperfection. Imperfection is a concept we entertain in our mental universe, and you've merely substituted that for a better concept, which you now call harmony. Neither are true. That is why Joel has said, if you think you've been good, better forget it. It might keep you out of heaven. You haven't been good, and you haven't been bad. You haven't been healthy, and you haven't been sick. You haven't been rich, and you haven't been poor. You haven't been a saint, and you haven't been a sinner. All of these are the concepts we have entertained about ourselves and our neighbors. You have always been what you are now, the invisible Christ of the Father, the child of God, living in the soul universe. And there has been a cosmic duplication in a mental universe. And that duplication we have wrongly identified as myself. That image which we have identified as myself turns out to be only an image of me, and a distorted one at that. Soul expression lifts you out of this mental distortion. Now, your belief, your acceptance of the Christ teaching means that at one point you become anchored in the truth that I am that invisible reality which is there where the withered arm was seen to be. If I had a withered arm and it were healed, it would be a revelation that nothing has changed, simply that the wholeness which is inherently invisibly present has been brought forth. by a sole witness, whereas the mind could not witness it. Your perfection will be brought forth by a sole witness. If you live in the mind, you cannot witness your own perfection. If you live in the soul, you will express it. But always, whether you witness it or do not, whether you express it or do not, the great teaching is that it is there. Where you are is the divine perfection, awaiting only recognition. And when it is recognized, thou art made whole. The wholeness of your being can never leave you. You simply are not recognizing the wholeness of it. And we cannot recognize the wholeness of it as we live in the belief that this image, this body, is where I live. The old man has to go. When you have practiced as best you can the conscious knowledge that I live outside of that image, you discover the new universe. You discover why I make all things new, why there is a new heaven and a new earth. You discover why there is no lack or limitation. You discover why grace is an experience, not just a word. You see then why Christ walked this earth, revealing that where that which we have called the world seems to be, there is a reality that is never divided or imperfect. And that reality is the Father's house. That reality is my kingdom, which is at hand. That reality is your Christ self, which is the Son of God, where you have been willing to accept the mortal child of a mortal parent. By even accepting yourself as the mortal child of a mortal parent, you have accepted your parent and deprived them of their own immortality. By saddling your own child as the mortal child of a mortal parent, you have deprived them of their immortality. And by knowing anyone on this earth as a mortal being, you are depriving them of the reality of their own being. You are passing sentence upon each person in the world when you regard them as saint or sinner, sick or healthy, wealthy or poor. You are viewing them in a mortal image and accepting it. It's difficult to understand Joel's statement, but he does say, we finally see that our work on this earth is to pray for our enemies, to forgive 70 times 7. And if you look at that from a literal level, from a human level, you think there's going to be a human being somewhere praying for their enemies and forgiving and forgiving and forgiving. But he's telling you no. Don't see them in a mortal image at all. And in order to do it, you must not see yourself in a mortal image either. If God created no mortal image, you cannot be in one. You can only think you are. That hypnosis, continuing and continuing, merely perpetuates the dream of a mortal life. To put on the garment of immortality, then, is the conscious practice that the mortal image is part of the cosmic blackout of the mental universe. There is no power in these mortal images whatsoever. The hand that withered was not a God creation. Before that hand withered, it was not a God creation. and therefore not there. And yet we think that hand, which was not there, can shoot a gun, can strike with a fist, can steal, but it isn't there. This is the degree of our hypnosis. We learn that matter isn't here, but we're afraid of the gun that points at us. We're afraid of the tornado. We're afraid of the physical powers of the world. But out of the hypnosis, just as we learn that being good isn't the way to heaven, we learn that we can overcome the hypnosis of matter and material powers and material lacks and material limitations. But we don't learn it through being human geniuses, through being superior intellects. We learn it by being an ice cube, by letting the Spirit do the work, by letting the Spirit teach us, by letting the Spirit reveal itself as the substance that we are, as the mind that we are, as the power that we are, as the presence that we are. And then that which we could not know through the human mental process, we learn through Spirit making itself flesh. The hidden manna reveals that the Spirit of you is omniscient. The Spirit of you bows to no second power and knows none. The Spirit of you knows no other presence than its own Spirit everywhere. You are above the pairs of opposites, not through mental activity, but through spiritual identity. The hidden manna never flowed through mortal beings. The hidden manna flowed in its own spiritual identity and made itself visible through the activity of the soul. Now first you'll notice then that John has held us to the human form, the human life, the human hand, the human eye, the human ear, to reveal the non-reality of the physical form and its physical senses. Step out of the imagination of the world, that eyes are imaginary, that ears are imaginary, that all physicality is imaginary. Yes, we seem to see, we seem to hear, but these are all relative. We're stepping out of the level of the mind into the soul, into our fifth kingdom, ultimately into the Spirit, as Spirit feeds soul, and finally into the seventh day, the infinite rest. Where we shall behold the fullness of being. That's the spirit in which we enter the new year. Transformation from mind to soul, from water to wine. And as we come out of the limited concept of matter here as my form and my senses, we will come out of the limited concept of a world of matter. And you'll notice John taking us now out into wider pastures. Now that he has taken us through the limited form, which does not exist, he'll show us how bread can come out of the sky. He'll show us the wider area we can travel once we overcome the limited concept, which has been the physical image. For practical purposes, to aid us in our path out of material belief into spiritual identity, so that we may live consciously outside a body image, we have the knowledge that now is the full presence of God everywhere. now is God present where you are. Now, God, Spirit, is not sharing that space with anything material. God is not sharing the space that your form occupies with that form. And God is there. The image you release as you rest in the presence of God. And it isn't a question of how can I realize this. It's a question of will I accept it? And accepting it, will I trust it? Will I relax in it? In the faith that God's presence is here, and that's all that's here. The Spirit is here, and that's all that's here. Therefore, the physical image cannot be here. It can only seem to be in the mind. And now can I rest in the knowledge that the Spirit will express all that God is where I stand. That Spirit is expressing everywhere all that God is. That right where I seem to be, the Spirit is expressing the full, complete qualities of the divine. All apparent error is a lie. All imperfection is a denial of the presence of the Spirit where I stand. I reverse that. I will not deny the presence of the Spirit. I will deny the belief in the imperfection which senses have told me is here. Instead of crucifying the Christ, we crucify the belief of the senses. We turn from the sense belief to the presence of Spirit where I am, and that is my name. That is my identity. Here stands the invisible child of God. Where's the imperfection? It cannot be here. Where's the withered arm? It cannot be here. Where's the good arm? It cannot be here. Where's the physical body? How can it be here if the Spirit is all that is here? How can Spirit be all and there still be a physical body? The acceptance of a spiritual self is the way the soul will express the divine qualities where you stand. No, there's nobody you can explain it to. Nobody at all. The mere fact that you even want to explain it to someone means you're accepting them as a physical image who needs an explanation. There's no one there to explain it to. There is only the Spirit of God. Can't tell a friend, there is no friend. You can't tell a mother, you can't tell a daughter, you can't tell a husband, you can't tell a wife. There aren't any. There is only the Spirit of God. We are crucifying the false sense of image, which has no existence in God. And we are accepting the allness of God. And this is the path to knowing God aright, which is life eternal. Form is released. The ice cube is moved by the tide of Spirit. Willingly, gladly, we rest in the tide of Spirit. Thy will be done to the Spirit, we say. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine. And we are content with whatever Spirit does. no outline, no manipulation, no attempt to enumerate our needs or our desires. We have no human motivation. When you find yourself without human motivation, you will feel a new freedom, because that is a divine trust. That is the acceptance of the presence of God. What need have I for human motivation, Father, when I know you are all that is here? But if I need human motivation, then I am still in duality. I do not accept that only God is here. I've still got a little sword to carry, a little mental work to do. I've still got to do these things that seem that they need to be done. I don't trust the Father to do all, to be all, to know all. Now that mind that still lingers as a human remnant, which would like to point out to the Father that I've got these things that still must be done, you know, that mind is the Pharisee. The fellow who turns on the Christ when the Christ heals on the Sabbath. That mind says to the Christ, "We're going to kill you. You did a bad thing. You broke our human law." That mind says, "I've got these things to do. I can't get around to a full acceptance of God's presence, because my little human mind knows better than God what must be done here. I've got to send the child to school. I've got to go to the supermarket. I've got to get that car which was hit the other day and get it fixed. If I don't do it, who will do it?" All these things crop up. You think that they are very reasonable. They are your denial that only God is present. You're obeying the eye that cannot see, the hand that cannot touch, and the ear that cannot hear. As if there were no healing of a withered arm, no sight given to the blind and hearing to the deaf, and the meaning is lost. We prefer to live in the soul universe on Tuesday and the mental universe on Wednesday. Or maybe in the morning in one and the afternoon in another. But some do find the capacity to say, "Well, what a relief. There's nothing for me to do anymore except be an ice cube and let the Father do the works." And then there's a magical transposition. Those things that I thought had to get done, get done. And it even looks like I'm doing them. I know I'm not. But that isn't all that happens. Not only do those things get done, they get done very well and speedily. But other things happen that wouldn't have happened. Grace shines its light through into this so-called mortal world in many places, and with continuity, and with love. And by inviting my spiritual identity to take over, all of infinity becomes my workshop. The image in which I had lived begins to be an image of infinity instead of the finite mind. We even get to the point where we don't care to analyze it. Because the moment we do, we're in that mind which is not the divine. We're willing to forego trying to find God through observation with our little Tower of Babel. We're willing to completely trust the God Spirit to be my Spirit, the Father and Son to be one Spirit. You see, Christmas then is more than a day . It's Christ accepted as identity. And you're in that which is neither day nor night, an old year or a new year. In Christ you're in the eternal now, where only divinity is happening. There's no other reality. Where only divinity is happening. And all physical images are revealed to you as imagination, cosmic imagination. They even become enjoyable to watch, to cooperate with, to move through. They lose their power to harm you or fascinate you. They lose their weight. You're no longer confined to the pictures they present. Some of you are going to put this off maybe 5 more years. Some of you are going to go to work with it. And even those who put it off for 5 more years will find someday they come to the place where there's nothing else they can do to make progress. They've got to learn to live outside the image of form, their own and their neighbor's. They're forced into the 2 commandments. You cannot acknowledge God and acknowledge a physical form too. You cannot acknowledge your form and God, your neighbor's form and God. You must acknowledge only God. And so you begin acknowledging the Father and not the form, and both commandments are fulfilled. Then you are the true soul witness of omnipresence, omniscience, and omnipotence. The grace of the Father is upon you. We haven't yet come to the chapter on this subject, which is incorporeality. But this year we're dropping the old man, and next year we're finding the new man. And the actual space of human time between them is 1 week, because next week we're going to do incorporeality, and this little week is just a preparation so that we can march into 1972 with that in mind. Now, this is just the beginning of today, or the halfway point. Incorporeality, non-physicality, spiritual presence recognized, lived in, letting it, waiting on the spiritual presence to reveal, identify, express its own divine qualities, instead of letting the human mind rush out